Court will proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus Harris. Mr. McKinley.
It pleases the court. Good morning. My name is James McKinley. I'm an attorney with the Federal Defender's Office in Indianapolis, representing Anthony Harris. Your Honor, just over 2 years ago, there was an Indianapolis police detective who sought and obtained a search warrant from a state court judge based on an affidavit that the U.S. District Court later found to suffer from material omissions and misrepresentations and misstatements of material facts that were intended to deceive the state court judge who issued the warrant. The district court made these findings after we challenged the warrant in a motion to suppress and had requested a hearing under Franks versus Delaware to explore my client, Mr. Harris's good faith suspicion that the informant in this case didn't even exist, that he was complete fabrication, and that detective involved here committed a wholesale fraud on the court. We went on to urge the district court in this case to grant us a Franks hearing, but in the alternative, to at least conduct an in-camera interview of the detective and, if necessary, the informant, just to confirm that there was such an informant. But rather than order a hearing, what the district court ordered was for the government to file a supplemental affidavit or an amended affidavit from the detective to detail certain questions the court had concerning the dates of his surveillance and some of the other alleged misstatements in the original affidavit. After reviewing the supplemental affidavit, the district court made findings regarding these material misrepresentations and the omissions and concluded that they were, in fact, intended and designed to mislead the state court judge by creating this impression that the investigation and the facts supporting the issuance of a warrant were more current than they actually were. Nevertheless, the court went on to find that that the false and omitted statements were not necessary to a determination of probable cause, and found that and made this independent finding of probable cause after adding the omitted information and deleting the material misstatements. Now, that would be consistent with the letter of the law as the Supreme Court set it out in Franks versus Delaware. However, the independent determination of probable cause here by the district judge was necessarily predicated on information provided by that informant. That is, essential to that finding was the informant's information. And the refusal of the district court here to grant us a hearing or to confirm the existence of that informant is our claim of error. It's our position that the refusal to convene a hearing or even to conduct the in-camera proceeding is incompatible with Franks versus Delaware, to the extent that the Supreme Court in Franks was creating a compromise. They were creating a very limited but nonetheless meaningful opportunity for defendants to protect against perjury and to deter police from committing perjury in warrant applications. I would submit that in this case, that the detective's misstatements, the omissions in his original affidavit and his misstatements give serious concern about his overall veracity, particularly as it relates to what he was told by the informant and as to whether the informant even existed. Now, consider this. This investigation, what prompted this investigation was an anonymous tip to a drug hotline, or what's known as the dope hotline in Indianapolis. It was an anonymous tip that my client, Anthony Harris, and Trent Harris, who's my client's brother, were selling dope out of this house. Clearly, the anonymous tip was insufficient to obtain a warrant. The detective then conducted surveillance beginning a few days later, which he conducted on six occasions, according to his affidavit, claims that he saw my client and Trent Harris, my client's brother, at the house on numerous occasions. Well, we established that that could not have happened because Trent Harris was in jail at the time. Moreover, the detective obviously knew that his observations, even coupled with the dope hotline tip, were insufficient to establish probable cause. He needed more. He purports to have enlisted the assistance of this confidential informant, who, he maintains, actually went to the house and saw my client and Trent Harris in the house, saw them with dope, spoke to both of them, and they had additional information that my client and his brother Trent Harris were dealing dope. Again, this is during a time period when Trent Harris was in jail. It could not have happened that way, and the district court recognized that, but kind of glossed over that fact by suggesting that maybe the detective and the confidential informant both misidentified Trent Harris. Now, do I know whether the detective fabricated this informant? Do I know whether he committed wholesale fraud on the court? No, I don't. But, you know, neither does the district court. And neither does this court, because no steps were taken to confirm whether this informant ever existed. And so what we're asking this court to recognize and to hold is that when a warrant affidavit relies primarily on an anonymous informant, and where a defendant denies via a specific affidavit facts attributed to him by that informant, and furthermore, when that defendant makes at least a minimal showing that there's inconsistency which supports his assertion that there's deliberate falsehood by the affiant, that a district court should or must conduct a hearing to allow that issue to be explored, or at least, at the minimum, conduct an in-camera inquiry or an interview of the affiant and, if necessary, the informant to evaluate the affiant's veracity with regard to the informant's existence and reliability. Without such a rule, a defendant is really placed or really faced with an insurmountable barrier. A defendant is, you know, invariably precluded from ever getting a Franks hearing where the probable cause is predicated on information of a confidential informant. He cannot make that threshold showing. And furthermore, without such a rule, police are generally invited to insulate perjury from disclosure or discovery by the simple expediency of a fabricated informant. That situation, I submit, is unacceptable, and I believe it requires this court in this particular case to reverse the judgment, remand this case back to the district court for further proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Cameron. Ms. Ridgway?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Cynthia Ridgway. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney in the Southern District of Indiana, and I represent the appellee in this case. The government's position is that the District Court, the Honorable Sarah Evans Barker, did exactly what she was supposed to do. She first reviewed to determine whether or not the appellant defendant made the requisite showing required. Did the appellant defendant, in fact, show that there were false statements or omitted statements? Were those false or omitted statements either made intentionally or with reckless disregard for the truth? And if those first two prongs are in fact met, then third, was that finding, that omission or that fact or statement material to the finding of probable cause? The district court in this case did, in fact, work through those three steps and found that there were false statements, that there were omissions, and that they were either intentional or recklessly made. What the district court did not find is that those omissions or false statements were material to the finding of probable cause, and the reason that the district court found that is because there was ample evidence to support a finding of probable cause, that there was a fair probability that evidence of a crime would be found at the residence, or that, in this case, Anthony Harris was in fact involved in criminal activity.
And then let's talk about the things that she had left. She had the hotline tip. You agree that's not enough for probable cause?
Yes,
right?
Your Honor.
Then she had Forrest saying that he made these observations, half of which were untrue, because he said he saw the defendant and the defendant's brother, Trent, and Trent was locked up.
That's correct.
Right, the sixth time. Now, the confidential informant, given the other falsities, I mean, what they're alleging is that there no confidential informant existed. And, you know, when you look at the record, the confidential informant says both of them were there. Forrest, in his six observations, say both of them was there. And the brother was in jail. I mean, see, I don't think you can include that testimony in the affidavit, or you can't include that allegation in the affidavit that the CI told him anything. And I think the judge relied on that, right? She included the fact that the CI said he had made these observations, even though those were incorrect, because the guy was in jail.
Yes, Your Honor. What the district court found was that the culmination or the combination of the evidence with regard to what the confidential informant told Detective Forrest was misleading in the affidavit. What the district court found, and I can't speak for the district court, but from a close review of her order, what she found was that in totality, looking at the information that Detective Forrest provided in his affidavit and in the supplemental affidavit, that the totality led to the likely intentional misleading with regard to time. What the district court did not find is that Detective Forrest intentionally misled the court or omitted or deceived the state court by saying that a confidential informant was present or provided information at all. What the district court also found was that the misidentification of Trent Harris was not material to the finding of probable cause. I don't believe, and the government's position is that just because a law enforcement officer misidentifies a person while conducting surveillance, that then disregards everything that the law enforcement officer did.
Oh, I understand that, but the problem is that the informant says that the brother was there having conversations when he was selling the drugs. The brother was in jail.
That's
and
correct.
The officer says he observed all these comings and goings, and it was the officer. I understand what Judge Barker said, but I find that very troubling. I don't see where there's this big other evidence that it is sufficient enough to show that there were other things that the court could have relied on that would have upheld the warrant. But I'm sorry.
See, just the finding that there were false statements, material false statements in the search warrant, is an unusual finding in and of itself. Very rare that we see that. I just would think the natural second step with that finding is at least an in-camera hearing to bring the detective in and tell him who is this informant to be sure the informant actually exists. I'm not sure you get a full-blown Franks hearing on this, but at least an in-camera proceeding with the judge. And we've all been trial judges, and it's not an unusual thing to do.
And I understand the court's position, and also there are numerous cases even cited by the defendant appellant where the district court did decide to do that, but that's not what's required. What's required and what this court has found and held repeatedly is that what is required is for the district court to either excise the false statements or add what was omitted to the probable cause affidavit and then make a determination of whether or not probable cause is in fact present.
Do you agree here, though, if, just assuming everything is present here, and if this is a fake confidential informant, there is no confidential informant. Assume that that's true. How would that ever be unearthed here unless you have a in-camera proceeding with the judge?
I understand that, Your Honor. I think that argument could be made in any case with a confidential informant.
Well,
in any case, then, if that was the case,
usually
we would
have an officer testifies about and a number of dealings with somebody and prior histories and all that sort of stuff.
And that information was, in fact, included in the initial affidavit submitted to the trial court, the state court judge. The information, the background information with regard to that confidential informant was included at the very end of the probable cause affidavit submitted to, in this case, the Marion County Superior Court judge.
But you have a detective here whose accuracy mm-hmm. and credibility have been called into question.
And I agree that that is what the district court found, but I would urge the court to look closely at the affidavit and the supplemental affidavit submitted by Detective Forrest in this case. This is not a case where a law enforcement officer blatantly lied to try and come up with information to support a search warrant to search a random house.
Yeah, and see, the problem I have, and it may well be he was just totally mistaken, but as I said, the problem I have is how is it that he says he's there six times and he sees Trent, who was in jail, and the confidential informant says there were many times he was there and Trent was in jail, and we have a problem with the timing. You know, so to me, you know, I just have a problem with that. So that's where I don't buy into to your logic.
I understand what the court is saying. What Detective Forrest delineated in his supplemental affidavit is that on six different occasions he conducted surveillance of the residence. That on four occasions he saw Anthony Harris, who was an individual that he personally had dealt with before in the past. Detective Forrest also further supplemented that by saying that on two occasions, he believes, and he is a state court detective, he did not write down every single date of his surveillance, but he believes that on two occasions, he saw Trent Harris. Mm-hmm. If a detective makes a false identification, whether intentionally or recklessly, of another person at a residence, that in and of itself should not be enough to disregard everything else that the detective did. It just shouldn't be. And in this case, if you look closely at the record, if you look closely at the search warrant affidavit along with the supplemental affidavit, what you will find is a state detective who tried to provide enough information to get probable cause but did not detail every single bit of his investigation. What Detective Forrest did is he provided information to the state court judge regarding the April 18th information that the confidential informant provided to the state court judge. Detective Forrest did not include the previous April 12th information that the confidential informant provided to the judge. And what the district court found was that that omission, not providing the background, the history of the investigation to the state court judge, that was a false, intentional, or reckless omission. This wasn't a case where the detective just decided to provide information out of the blue, grasp it from the air, and put it in an affidavit.
And see, like, maybe I could buy that if the district court didn't say the affiant made the false or omitted statements intentionally or recklessly, and then, I mean, just lays it out, the problems that she had. And this saying it's intentional or reckless versus mistaken or accidental, I think torpedoes your argument.
I understand the court's position. I would respectfully ask the court to take a close look at the affidavit as a body and the supplemental affidavit and look to determine whether or not you believe that this affiant, Detective Forrest, that the intentional or reckless omissions made by Detective Forrest as found by the district court take away the findings of probable cause that the court made after doing exactly what your honors are doing. This district court, having the facts in front of her, looked to determine whether or not the affidavit, after including the omitted statements and excising the false statements, in fact had probable cause. If there was probable cause, if there was a fair probability that evidence of a crime would be found at that residence. And reviewing that de novo, as this court will be doing, I would ask the court to look at the findings that the district court after making that final, after taking that final step. Because what you will find is that there was still a hotline tip on March 25th that there was, in fact, ongoing drug dealing at this residence. You will find that the detective...
And the ongoing drug dealing that you're saying, that was based on what the detective said he observed about people going in and out.
Along with the information provided by the confidential informant.
Right. So we're back to the same thing.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley.
Thank you.
Mr. McKinley.
Very briefly, Your Honor, again, we're not contending that the district court here failed to follow the dictates of Franks versus Delaware, but understand Franks versus Delaware did not involve a confidential informant, which really distinguishes this situation.
Mr. McKinley, would you have Judge Barker in camera have the detective orally make the representations that he made in the supplemental affidavit? Is that the kind of inquiry you think she should have made?
Well, I think at a minimum she should make that inquiry, and you know, if this court were to order,
rather than do it just on the paper, so to speak.
I'm sorry.
Rather than do it just on the paper.
Rather than do just something on paper, I think the court should actually bring the affiant in there, and in this particular case, ask the informant to be presented. I mean, there's really no legitimate objection in this situation to have the government produce the informant for an in-camera inquiry. I mean, the concern about disclosure is sufficiently addressed because of the way that would be handled. So that would be a sufficient remedy under the circumstances to make sure that there be some confirmation that there has not been a wholesale fraud on the court.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McKinley.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ridgway. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.